Hey, welcome to the world famous Phil Henry Show and philhenryshow.com. That's our website, philhenryshow.com. It's a Phil only, and that means it's going to be without the panel today. Now, I didn't earmark today, and by the way, yesterday, yes, I was not well. Man, I don't know what happened to me, but just about an hour before we went on the air, I started sweating. I thought I had malaria, then I realized that was impossible. I mean, where was I going to get them? I mean, I've been out, you know, like cutting vines back, but I don't think there's malaria out in my backyard that I know of. I don't think my cat's got it. I don't think Thunder has it. So I realized that there's other stuff that was going on with me. Probably mostly I was dehydrated. I forget to drink water. I'm going to be perfectly honest with you. I forget to drink water. It ain't that I forget to drink, and I don't mean booze, but I'm constantly with the Diet Cokes. Yeah, I know. I understand. I know I get it. It's bad. 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 I know. But last night I was a mess. All right, the very first thing I want to do before we commence our Phil Only here on this Thursday is announce the winner of our Bar Fight Showdown number 2. First of all, the winner in the bar fight was, as you know, is between Ted Bell and Jeff Dowder. Ted Bell is the winner, 72% to 28%. 72% of you guys thought that Ted would definitely take it to Jeff Dowder. 28% thought Jeff might have a chance. And I think you gave Jeff a better chance this week than you gave Bobby Dooley last week. I think Margaret won that 79% to 21%. Ted takes a slightly smaller share of the votes, 72% to 28%. Ted Bell wins Bar Fight Showdown number 2. And who is our winner of a special Phil Henry Show download in predicting the winner being Ted Bell? This week's download winner is Marvin Moskowitz.
Yes!
Marvin Moskowitz lives in Keensburg, New Jersey. He likes to hang out at the tattoo parlor. He's a tattooist, excuse me. You don't just live there, Marvin. You are there. I mean, you're all of that and more. Anyway, Marvin Moskowitz is the winner of our download, the Phil Henry Show download from Keensburg, New Jersey. Way to do it, Marvin. Here is Marvin's winning comment. Marvin said, Ted Bell will win because he will pay the Dunphy brothers to be there for intimidation or to help out. Damn right. Yes, Marvin. Way to do it, brother. All right, so we have a Bar Fight Showdown 3 coming up. We will announce the participants in that on our Friday show. And stick around for that one. That's going to be beautiful. And then, of course, we have a BSP. Join us for our Backstage Pass chat on Friday nights. You know, we got a lot going on here at the Phil Henry Show on our website. We have, you know, 20,000 hours, 30,000 hours of, you know, it's getting up there, man, you know, of content. We're getting ready to load in our Miami archives that we've been promising over and over and over again. Yes. Yes. Oh, yes. We also have our Friday night chat where we hang out. We have a live show that we do on Sunday nights. Live streaming show on Sunday night. So, and a lot of other special event things that we're going to be planning for you throughout the summer. So get a backstage pass and hang with us here at the world famous Phil Henry Show. And then today, you know, unlike most of our shows, we have what's called a Phil Only. I'm going to hang out with you guys because people like that. They've asked for these, and in what numbers they've asked for them, I don't know, but we want to deliver these. I'm trying to deliver at least one of these shows a week. We'll see how that works out. And by the way, can I say something? Thank you for the shout out. I think it was a decent shout out from Joe Rogan, who said that Alex Jones is like a really super popular Phil Henry. And some of the guys in my crew said, well, that's not a compliment. I said, I think it is. I was never as popular as Alex Jones is now. So that, forget that. I know that we have our level of popularity. There's people that love us and hold us close to their hearts, but we're not the crazy sort of popular that Alex Jones is. And I think what Joe's point was is that Alex is full of shit. Now, that's Joe's point. And so are we. But I think there's a difference. The difference is that I'm not so sure Alex is trying to be funny. That's all. Although I do know that Alex, in my opinion, and obviously in Joe Rogan's opinion, is putting it on. And I do agree with that. I do agree with that. And it, when, you know, when Alex got cornered there the other day, when was that? He got cornered a little bit and he said, well, you know, you got to understand, I'm just playing a character here. Now, I believe that's what he's doing. If I'm wrong, if he just used that as an excuse, if he used that as a convenient out, then I don't know. But I don't believe, I've never believed that he believes the shit he says. And that's just my opinion. However, let us commence today with our Phil Only. Just a heads up here, it's something I discovered. I don't know if you'll find it to be the case, but I did. Watching our show, watching me do this show, is actually, in my opinion, funnier than listening to it, because I did it yesterday, and I said, well, that's pretty funny, and then I heard it in the car. I was driving home today, and that's the same segment that I heard, and it was funny. It wasn't quite as funny as when I was watching it. I don't know why that is. Well, there's a few reasons. One, I look funny doing it. It's a funny-looking show anyway in how we execute, but I mean that. I was laughing my ass off yesterday watching it, and then today, after we produced it, and that day, as I was coming back from a meeting I had in town, I'm listening, and that's the segment I was listening to, I was watching. It's funny, but it was funnier when I was watching it. So why do I say that? Get a backstage pass and get our video content as well as our audio. Thank you. So if I got to edit the thing, it was funny, but it wasn't as funny. It's because I already heard it. Anyway, welcome back. Yes, I was. I was very badly dehydrated. I didn't feel good yesterday. So I had to not work. I didn't. I was sweating like a motherfucker. I didn't know what the hell was wrong with me. I thought I was coming down with some kind of Tonga River fever. Remember when my voice would sound like this? Yeah. Remember those days? That was Miami. We didn't even do that in L.A., Tonga River fever was a thing was exclusive to Miami, and I would just have anybody in the station to start the show. Hi, and they would just sit down and say, "Hi, this is Phil Hendry." I would tell them what to say, and they'd have, you know, it'd be like someone else's voice, like a chick. One time it was RuPaul. God is my witness, RuPaul was there, and RuPaul started my show. Hi, this is Phil Hendry, and I've got Tonga River fever, so you can hear, you know, the way I sound. But hopefully, if I get enough water in me. Wasn't even regularly scheduled, and it became a thing, you know, and people liked it, and then of course we got to LA, and it wasn't quite as workable because we were on at night in Los Angeles, and there weren't that many interesting people around. The place was deserted, you know, at night in LA, and maybe it was a lot. You know, I love being on at KFI. Don't get me wrong, but WIOD was just a lot of fun. It was just a fun fucking place to work for me. It was. I don't know. Some people, but I loved it. I loved it. I loved everybody there. I loved the women. Excuse me for being, I did. We had gorgeous chicks that worked in the sales department. We had beautiful chicks in the news department. We had, you know, we had funny fucking guys on the air. I thought we had a great GM. I loved our general manager. You know, Neil might have had his opinion, but Neil, you know, had his opinion of a lot of people. And even when Neil didn't like somebody, it was entertaining, you know. Where we worked was beautiful. We worked at a radio station sitting right on a kind of a semi-little island in the middle of Biscayne Bay. It was called the Bay Causeway, Bay Village. Was that the name? I can't remember this little subsection of Miami we worked in. But you come to work every night over the causeway in the middle of the Biscayne Bay. And you go on the air, and then when you left at night, you're driving over the bridge. I mean, I'm telling you, that was when I was working at night, and then I did afternoon drive. But nothing was ever that relaxing, because every goddamn day of my life was a pressure-packed thing, just a pressure cooker, just a gun in the fucking mouth, man. I could never really 150,000% enjoy anything, because it was just, you know. And I don't believe that's the way life should be. Some people may say, well, if you're going to be successful, that's how it is. Well, bullshit, you know, in my opinion. It just can't be, you know. And it only got more and more and more and more. And when I got to L.A. and I got married, there were more and more and more and fucking more, you know. And then you're just, what? You're working to not get, you know, thrown into debtor's prison. What the hell is that about? I just got started flashing on Miami there and the fun. We had a ball. And then Friday night, whatever. I had a girlfriend at the time, but she didn't live in town. She lived in Minneapolis, Yvonne. But she commuted in like once a month. It was ridiculous. It was ridiculous. You know, it's ridiculous. You know, when I moved to California, she said, my sister said to her, well, he's not moving you to fucking California without putting a ring on your finger. And I don't know whether she said it to her or she said it to me, but I repeated it to Yvonne. I said, my sister said I shouldn't move you again. And Yvonne looked at me and went, fucking A, like that. Like, okay. It was fucked. Not her. Yvonne was fine. I was fucked up. I was completely fucked up. Too much of a fucking guy. Just still being a fucking child. You know. The truth is, when I got to L.A., I had the opportunity to go fucking wild. I had the opportunity to go. I had the opportunity to live the bachelor life. I was making good bread. I was about to make even better bread. My show was taking off. What did I need to get tied down for? What did I need to get? I'm not knocking Maria. Don't get me wrong. I'm just, what did I need to fucking get tied down for? What did I have to do? But that was who I was at that time. I felt like I'm the biggest dork you'll ever meet. I'm just all about, I'm Mr. Traditional. I'm just, well, now now I should do the right thing. I'm in a position where I can, yes, indeed. So that's me. And I inherit a lot of that from my father. My father used to speak of himself as a, my old man used to say, of himself, he was a real square. Because this is my dad. You know, we got to Europe. He's talking about World War II. When they got to England. And all the other guys went off partying. And my dad wanted to go see a castle. He'd read about this castle he wanted to see. He says, that's the kind of square I was. Sounds like me, too. Because while I like to have a good time, I got this real sense of duty. And I'm not saying to you that makes me some kind of hot shit, because it does not. I do not believe it does. I believe that in many ways it's been a drawback. Because you want to know some, if you're not yourself in this world, I don't give a shit what kind of a goody two shoes you turn out to be. You're not being who, I think it's a sin. If you want to, you know, being raised Catholic and hearing that word sin, there, I don't really know what, I heard, what was Leonard Cohen's song, I don't know what song it was, he says, you know, loneliness tells you that you've sinned. See, that's the result of, loneliness is the result of sin. I don't know, I think that's an interesting viewpoint, but more importantly, maybe your boredom tells you that you sinned. I think that tells you that you've committed a sin. You're bored, or you're working too hard. You're under pressure. You got a heart attack. All of those things. We think of those things as being, you know, indications of strain and stress. You know, going down in the line of duty. We think of that stuff as being, you got a medal for that shit. Well, maybe you're actually committing a sin against God and all of his angels when you work too goddamn hard, when you do for others far more than you've ever done for yourself, and you wind up a broken and neglected and broke and bitter guy. Why are you like that? Because I committed a fucking mortal sin here, man. I spent too much time. And some people say, oh, now charity and love. Well, I don't know if that's charity and love. When you try to buy somebody's love, when you're trying to, you know, you say, well, I love this person. And I care for this person. I'm going to do for this person, you know. That's a great way to be. But if there's anything in there that is really the following thing, if there's anything in there that is, maybe they'll love me if I do all this shit for them, then you got a problem there, man. I mean, I know I in my life I have. It's been bad for me. Bad, man, ain't even no good. This is one of those rants I'm doing. Now I got to sit and think, am I going to, this is one of those pre-shows. Now I got to, yeah, is this going to be the show or is this not? You know, what is this? Okay. My ear itches. Hold on. When you do that, and I think, you know, and I was the biggest schmuck in the world for my entire life, practically, thinking that I could buy people's love if I was nice enough to them, if I was a good enough boy, if I was a good enough man, if I was a good enough... And what does that do? Well, it castrates you. You seriously become... You're castrated. You become just this fucking emasculated good boy. No fucking woman respects that. Maybe your mom digs it. I don't know. My mom sort of dug it, but she had her own goddamn problems. So she was, you know, why aren't you a good boy? And then she's on to the next, she's on to her problems. Hey, mom, look what I got you. I mean, I'm not blaming my mother for this. I'm just telling you, I'm not. It, again, is one of those me not seeing people. But I would get her stuff. I would buy her the latest shit. Back when VCRs were where it was at, I'd get her a VCR. Back when this was that, I used to say to her, let me buy you a car, Mom. She didn't drive. At a certain point in her life, she finally just forget it. And we all the kids would say to her, well, Mom, if you had it, I don't want to, you know. It was like it was painful. Hey, Mom, let me buy you a Cadillac. No. Yeah. Let me buy you a Cadillac, Mom. And oh, God, are you kidding? On the freeway with the idiots and the thing, are you like you just did something horrible? Like you got arrested and she's seeing you in a striped suit or something? Oh my God! Imagine how your mother would react if you were arrested as a fucking crack dealer. How would your mom react? All of you out there, that's how my mom reacted when we offered to buy her a Cadillac. It's the truth. I swear to God, I was, Mom, and it pissed me, it got to a point, it pissed me off. Now, the whole thing has turned into just a big shitball, man. I mean, it's rolling down a hill, and who started what, and it doesn't make any difference, because now she's pissed off that you want to buy her a Cadillac, you're pissed off because she doesn't want you to buy a Cadillac, and she doesn't appreciate you, and she's pissed off, and now it becomes, that was the Henry dynamic right there, and that, at least, that was the dynamic between myself and my mother, I should say. At that particular point in my life, in my 20s, when I was an adult and I had now out on my own and my own resources and I could turn around and look back on my family, mom, dad, sisters, brother, what can I do for them? How can I be a better brother? How can I be a better son? How did I fuck up? And how can I because all of my life, all I ever thought of was myself as a fuck-up. All my life, all I ever saw myself was a failure. As a person, as a man. Not necessarily as an artist or what I do here in Radioville. But every other way, I fucked up. Every other goddamn way. How do I stop fucking up? How do I stop doing this shit? How do I stop breaking hearts? How do I stop going through the day like it's a war? How do I stop being unfaithful? And how do I stop, you know, fucking around and pissing people off, you know? God damn it. And then the day came, you see, when I had enough of calling myself a piece of shit morning, noon, and night. The day came when I'd had enough of that. You know, the day came when I couldn't do it anymore. The day came when I just was not going to look at myself as the biggest fuck up the world had ever known. And on that day, I said, wait a minute. You know, it is... There's a few people. And see, I've always said, and you guys that know me well know that I've always said, I cannot stand people that cannot take responsibility. I cannot stand, I'm the opposite. I saw so much of it in my life. I grew up in a house full of people that were, I didn't do it. Well, I don't know what you're talking about, because I sure didn't do it. I could never fathom people like that. I never, to this day, I don't understand people like that. Who the fuck are you? Where do you come from? How are you formed? What planet are you from? What planet are you from? What do you mean? That you can't stand there, put your feet on a goddamn ground like a man and a woman and say, I had something to do with this shit. I better get a mop and start cleaning up. We're living in a goddamn age of that now. We got a president, man. That's all that guy is. Excuse me. I don't want to piss anybody off, but I'm telling you right now, we are now fully into the age of the, people want to use the word narcissist. I don't know if that's the right word, but we're living in the age of self-aggrandizing and blameless entities, people, humanoids. Oh, I didn't do it. It's not me. I'm great. I'm fantastic. Look at all the shit I've done. You can't get much sicker than that. And I mean, that's sick. That's fucking sick. Now, I didn't really grow up in a house full of people that thought that their shit didn't stink. But I grew up in a house full of people. I didn't do that. You know, it was kind of blameless people. And what happened to me was I got into my late 30s, early 40s, and I finally sat down one day, or maybe I was standing up. I don't know what the hell I was doing, to be honest with you. I don't remember if it was a day or 2 days, if it took a week. But it dawned on me. I said, you know, you're going to have to start doing something that you've never done before in your life. Not since you blamed your sister for melting a box of crayons on a floor heater when you were both 5 and 4 years of age and your father came out and you blamed Marianne, and you know full goddamn well you did it, and you watched as she got spanked. And that haunted you and hurt you your whole life until you finally went to your sister sometime, maybe in my 30s, I think. And I went, I said, you know that I am so sorry, Marianne, that I did that. And she laughed and she said, I'm going to hold that over your head for the rest of your life now. She laughed every time I bring it up. Every time I bring that up to Marianne, now she laughs. She says, aha, now I got it on you. Because that's how sweet and how beautiful she is. But God damn it, that poor baby. I was only 5. But I was frightened to death of my father's anger. But that didn't matter to me. Even at the age of 5 or 6 or 7, I should have been man enough to be able to take my dad's anger. Just stand there and just, that's what I thought. Today, what do I say to you? Today I say to you, a 5-year-old boy is afraid. My father was a very angry guy. He could be very scary. 5-year-old kid is going to be, children don't lie because they're just sinful. I mean, you know, you're a sinful, you're born a liar. I don't buy that. Kids lie when they're afraid. Maybe some kids are got their wires crossed at birth and they're, you know, little miniature Charles Mansons. I don't know. I can tell you in my case, that wasn't it. So I watched as my kid sister took the heat for that. She cried as she brought a box of crayons that she thought would appease my father's anger. He said, bring me the crayons that you melted on this floor heater. And Marianne came crying with this little box of crayons. She didn't know if those are the ones or not. She just brought whatever crayon. I mean, talk about false confession. I saw it happen. Little 4-year-old girl. She just didn't want to be yelled at anymore. I felt like a piece of shit for years after that. And I could never go to her and say, God, Marianne, until finally at some point I told her. And her reaction was, it was funny. She said to me, really? Yeah, that was bad. And she saw how it was bugging me. And she says, well, you know, I'm going to hang that over your ass now, man. I got you. Oh, man, I got you. And from that day forward, it was funny. It became a point of bonding for us. And, you know, and I mean, bless her for that, you know. But that was the last time that I ever blamed somebody else for something that I did. So through my whole goddamn life, maybe that was the thing that made me take, you know, like responsibility for even shit that I didn't do, you know. Well, I'm going to make up for that. I'll just, you know, take responsibility for stuff that I didn't do. But I went through my whole life practically, and I got sick and tired of, you know, taking the blame, whatever you want to call it. Blaming myself constantly. What did I, you know, why am I such a bad son? Why am I such a bad person? You know, why am I a bad man? you know. And I stopped one day because it wasn't helping. Life wasn't getting any better. I mean, I'm talking about in my personal relationships. My career, just so I can be clear with you, somehow, some way, I was able to separate, and maybe it's because that was the escape for me from all of the wretchedness of the interpersonal wretchedness of my life. My career, my work, being on the air, whatever, being a comic, a comedian, a funny guy. I didn't even have enough pride to call that anything. What do you do, Phil? I'm on a radio. I'm do funny stuff on the radio. What is that? That's about as nebulous and unfocused, and that's taking a profession and just deconstructing it to the point that it doesn't exist. And that's so you don't feel like you're hot shit. So you don't lord it over anybody. You don't make people feel bad. What do you do? I do a talk show on the radio. I don't say, I'm a satirist, I'm a humorist, I'm a comic, I'm a comedian. Wow, I'm a voice actor. I don't know. Maybe it's because I didn't know what the hell to call it. I still don't, you know, to be honest with you. But so anyway, all these years roll by. The only thing that's going on in my life that's any good at all is a career that I pushed myself along in that because I figured, God damn it, there's got to be something in this world that I know how to do. That is what I'm going to put my energy into. And man, everything else can be falling apart, but that, I'm gonna will that forward. I don't care. You wouldn't have believed it. I mean, I sometimes I astounded myself. I just, by sheer force of will, in radio, when you are, well, I mean, I was fired after I really got my act together, really got my shit together, knew what I was doing. I still was getting fired. I got canned in Ventura. I got canned in Atlanta. I damn near almost got canned in Minneapolis. But the difference was I was getting canned and I didn't give a shit because I knew where I was going. I had somewhere to go and I knew I hadn't done. I knew that I was getting better, you know. But anyway, somewhere along the line, maybe it was in Minneapolis, I looked at my life. I said, when it came to all this other just destroyed stuff, relationships, all the other stuff I've been talking about. And at some point I said, you know something, this whole blaming yourself stuff because you ain't this and you ain't that, that's impossible. That's impossible. And I'm having this conversation with myself and I'm saying, why do you say it's impossible? You can't be born so jacked up that you've right out from the gate forward, you have terrible relations with your parents. You struggle in your relationships with other people, especially women. You struggle with anger issues. You're not a bad man. If I was a bad man, I knew enough about what bad men and bad women were to know that bad men and bad women don't know that they're bad men and bad women. They think they're great. They think they're fucking fantastic. They think they're geniuses. And the rest of the world just doesn't get it. And the rest of the world is stupid. And the rest of the world is standing in their way, right? That wasn't me at all. And I got mad. I didn't get mad. I didn't get mad as in raging mad. And I didn't get mad as in I got mad and I took charge of my life. It wasn't good mad and it wasn't bad mad. It was just this mad in the middle. I was angry. I was like, what the f-? What have I been doing? What have I been doing? I'm a talented guy. I'm a good guy. I got a conscience. Let's put it that way, okay? I don't know what the hell that means, but I know I got a conscience. And I know when someone is... I know what's right and I know what's wrong. And I have allowed myself to get smacked around in this world. And I started to blame some people. And I started not taking shit from the people that I shouldn't have been taking shit from. There's a lot of people that I blamed that weren't blameless. There were a lot of people that I took it out on through the course of my life that had nothing to do with it. In other words, they were innocent bystanders. Because I was so blind, I couldn't see who was where the real hazards were. So I, that day, whatever day it was, I said, I'm going to start speaking a little truth here about some things that I suddenly know. Because, you know, you can go to therapy, and that works. And sometimes, not always, but sometimes, bang, it just, you know, there it is right in front of you. The answer is right in front of you. I didn't have any therapy. I'd had some therapy in my 20s. Maybe it was the result of that. Maybe that stuff just, maybe it incubated, and all of a sudden I'm standing there on a snowy street corner in St. Paul, Minnesota, and I go, aha, this is, look where I am. Now I know I'm jacked up. No, I'm just, I wonder why my life sucks. I'm in St. Paul, Minnesota. No, I'm joking. I knew when I was in St. Paul, Minnesota, things were going real good. They were. They were going really good. Some people may think that that's rather oxymoronic. Not at all. Life was good, man. I had my shit together professionally. And it was only a matter of time at that point. In my mind, it was only a matter of time. So that's the only thing maybe I had in my whole life that I had 150,000% confidence in was my career with my talent. Somebody says, you know, do you think you have the talent to be an actor? And the answer that I give is, yeah. Now, anybody that has any confidence in what they're doing with their lives, you say, do you think you have the talent to be a doctor? Yeah. I mean, it's not that you have an ego. Yeah. By God, yeah. It's what I want to do. It's what I love to do. It's who I am. Do you think you have the talent, really, Phil, to be a really great radio personality? Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Sure. Because we want to make sure. Just move on to the next question, man. I got that in spades, Jack. What else do you want to know? When you got people going, I don't know, it's something that I've wanted to try, you got a problem right there. You got the talent to do this kind of work? I think so. That's not a good answer. That ain't a good answer. Anybody that's got the real, anybody believes in themselves, regardless of the profession, says yes. Yes. Not because the ego is speaking, but because the whole life's mission is speaking. You know, you're destined. But when it came to the rest of it, forget it. I had no confidence. I didn't know. Do you think you have the confidence? You think you're going to have to be a great father? This is a great question. Phil, do you think you'd make a great father? Man, fuck, I don't know. Really? Yeah, really. Do you think you'd make a great husband? Fuck, are you kidding? I mean, I have no fucking idea. When you tell me, would I make a great husband, I'm not even sure that's what I want to be. Not a great husband, a husband. And there's a whole bunch of reasons for that that aren't necessarily good. Jesus. I think that I'm watching too much TV news. I never thought I'd ever say this, but I'm done. I'm not done, but I got to get away from this thing before I put my head through this television. I cannot take it any longer. I can't listen to this dog shit any longer, because there's a war going on television between facts and alternative facts, news and fake news, truth and fake news, truth and alternative news, or alternative truth, truth and truthest, truther and truthiest. Jesus. It's fucking depressing. Anyway, I finally said, no, I mean, I gotta, and I'll tell you, it's a tough thing for me. It's hard for me to say, they did it, all them over there. That's the reason those people there, man. I didn't do shit. They did it. Because it sounds abnormal to me. It doesn't sound like a normal state. It doesn't sound like a healthy statement at all. But you know what? In the case of my life, it was true in certain areas. It was absolutely true. To this day, I'll tell you it's true. And I've lived I've lived a long time, man. I mean, a lot of people live longer, but, and living a long time doesn't mean really what I intimated that it means. What I should say is I've learned a hell of a lot in my life. I've learned a hell of a lot in my life. And if somebody say to me, well, okay, what's the meaning of life? I'd say that's the wrong question. That's the wrong question. You don't ever ask that question, what's the meaning of life? You know, the right question is, what can I do? What is it that I'm supposed to be doing? Who am I? And how do I use that to create more joy than just for myself, you know? Who and what am I? And how do I proceed to become that thing and then stop thinking so goddamn much about myself and let this sort of emanate, you know, reverberate out into the world beyond me? That's it. Who the hell am I? And how do I use that for the benefit of not just myself, but everything I come into to contact with? For the benefit, not the control of, not to prey on, not to own, not to harm, you know. If you're someone that says, how do I use this magnificent skill that I have so that I can control? You got yourself a problem there, you know, that's a person you got to keep an eye on. That's a person that you got to get ready to deal with. And they're around. They're everywhere, man. They're everywhere. You want to make sure that you don't go off the deep end and identify the wrong people. But, you know, you have to be able to, you got to keep your eyes open. And one of the things, you know, if you wanted to say, well, what's the meaning of life? I don't know if it's the meaning of life, but I'll tell you one thing. If you could learn this, you got it over 97%, 98% of the human race. You want to know what it is? I'll tell you right now. You want to be a part of the 2% of the human race? They always talk about the 1% with the money. I got news for you. If you're part of the 2% with this, you can be one of the 1% with the money if you want to. And here it is. To see the world, to really see the world as it is, as people are, as they so want us to see them. So, you know, I'm not saying that we need to see them as really cool looking. People just want us to see them. They want to, I'm here. Here I am right here. See me. To be able to do that beyond what we do now, which is only think about things through our own selves. How does it affect me? You know, where, you know, how's this? How do I look in this shirt? What, you know, I can't wait to say something. I'm listening to people talking and all I can do is wait. It's like, it's tearing me apart that I can't start yapping my mouth off right now. Tell everybody how I feel about shit. Wait, I can't wait for my scene to come up in acting class. I can't wait for the teacher to ask me what I think. I can't wait for her to shut up so I can tell her what I think. I can't wait for the conversation to roll around to me so I can tell everybody how brilliant I am and what I think about this thing. I can't wait to get my story told. Wait till I tell everybody about this great drink that I just discovered. Well, everybody else is talking about their day. I just can't wait for them to shut up so I can get to my thing. That's where 98% of the human race lives. That's where 98% of the human race lives. 2% of the goddamn human race, excuse my French, knows how to see the world. And even, you know, I'm not, you know, that's a hard thing to do, man, because if you're looking out at how people really are and trying to discern how they really feel or how they really are, what their state of being really is, you're also thinking, I wonder if I'm getting groovy at this. You know, you're kind of already stroking your own ass and just, I'm looking out and I'm seeing how, I wonder if people think I look cool. It's tough to do. It's really tough to keep your ego. I should say that, say it in reverse. It's not difficult to keep your ego in check when you're doing this. So for you to really do this and still be kissing your own ass, that's a real feat. You can't do both. It's impossible. Getting up in the morning and going to the day. Well, I can't do it. That means that you're not paying attention to yourself and your own well-being. No, bullshit. No, you know, if you're worried about that, just let me back up and take another run at this thing. You're not going to walk in front of buses. You're not going to let someone, you know, I'm going to be so concentrating on how other people are and how the world is that somebody's going to mug me. It's impossible. You're hyper aware. And I don't mean that in a delusional or in some tripped out manic way. I don't mean that at all. You're not blissed out. You're not, it's not like you're on speed. You're sober. You're within your own self, you know, but you're seeing the world is all. That right there, I've never been able to do, although I have given it a fair try, and I, throughout, you know, my life, I continue. Toby Keith is on TV right now, and I can't tell if he is he African-American? Okay. I'm serious. It looks, he's wearing a black Dodger hat. Fine with me, but he's a very well-known country artist, as you know, and I'm not that familiar with him. He looks African-American. I wonder if he's wearing dark makeup or something. Because I thought he was a Euro-American, European-American. Am I being stupid? I don't know. I'm serious. Not that he'd mind. I probably shouldn't even have brought it up. But so anyway, there's something. That's from the minute you're born, you're already on a mission to see other people as they are, who they are, to see the world as it is and what it is. From the minute you're out of the womb, now that's impossible, obviously, as a baby. This is something that the minute a kid becomes teachable, it's something to begin to, inculcate, is that the right word? It's something to impress upon them. Somehow, however you teach it, I don't know. I wouldn't even know how to teach it. I'm just saying this to you because I know that that is a skill that is beneficial to the millionth degree, and very, very, very few people have it. It would make this world, by leaps and bounds, a better place. And you know the people, man, that don't have that ability. You know, just this world is in the opposite direction. You know, and the fact is, in the society we live in a free society where the individual is free, that's a good thing. I'm not putting it down. It's great. But any world that emphasizes the right of the individual is teetering on the brink of something very scary. And that is, it's like a psychopath's paradise, because I'm important. I'm the individual. And all that other crap that you're talking, Phil, about seeing the world, that's anti-individual, man. That's anti-liberty. That's anti-freedom. We think freedom is sucking our own, excuse me for saying, we think it's, that. It ain't. Freedom's using 100% of what we are, and I've heard people say that, but I never knew what that was. What did that mean? Until I reached a certain part of my life, you know. Here's another way. Here's another way to find the meaning of life. When someone asks you the meaning of life, and you give this marvelous dissertation, and then you're done and you sit back and you hear someone sit up and say, "I disagree. Here's what I think." And you can keep your mouth shut and just sit and listen and not be resentful, but think, "Wow, maybe I missed something." That's another way of keeping your eyes open to the world and keeping your mouth shut. And I don't mean it in the way that we've traditionally been told that since the time we were kids, you know. Keep your mouth shut and your ears open. I don't mean that. I mean there's a balance, you know, between sharing and then sort of kicking back and opening your ears up and listening. Okay, now what have they got to say here? Because if a dude says to you, after your long, very impressive dissertation, because I've heard people get really pissed off, you know, when it's, "And so, at the end of the day, King Arthur slayed the dragon." Really? Well, I got another opinion on that. Well, and then the next thing you know, you got an argument. There's a push and shove. There's a give and take. I remember I was in, I was in Fiji. And I was at a hotel, very luxurious hotel. Anyway, no, but I was sitting there and I was having cocktails with a guy and his girlfriend, and I was there with my wife Maria, and he was talking. He was from Indiana, and he was I think it was a hardware store owner or something. And I said something along the lines of, "What are you guys going to do tomorrow?" And he said, "Well, you know, I think we're going to go bungee jumping, you know." And I said, "Wow, that's very impressive. I have a fear of heights myself." Well, that was the entree for this guy to, you see, Phil, and he did. He actually used that tone. He cocked his head backwards a bit. The girlfriend looked at him adoringly with the big brunette bouffant whack hair job. The hairdo. I'd have to have photographs to actually describe it. But he says, you see, Phil, most people never really challenge themselves. And he was going on like this. And I sat, and I hope I wasn't rude. I don't think I was. I was, yeah. But in my head, I'm thinking, how does this guy know who, he doesn't know anything about me. And he's telling me how it is, you know? And afterwards, I told myself, Henry, what an ass you are. I had one of those conversations again. So, well, why do you think that way? What are you sitting there and resenting what the guy's doing? Listen to him, man, because he may, in all of that bullshit, there, and it was a lot of it, there might be something you can use. Because it isn't, people are not worth listening to because everything they say from point A to point Z is just magnificent and eloquent. And oh gosh, how I thank you, and where do I buy your book? That ain't where it's at. That's, man. You know, that's a cat you pay to go here. All right. Then you have the right to say, your thing tonight, yeah, it really blew, man, because it did not hold my attention. That's when you're going out for the evening and you pay bread to go see somebody. In normal conversation, not everyone is the most fascinating, glib, marvelous raconteur from beginning to end. There's like, well, this podcast, for instance. I'm hoping that it's held your attention. But even then, you know, what am I going to do? But the point I'm trying to make is, in life, when we're just sitting down with people, a guy is going to start to talk, and it's going to be boring, but it might become good at a certain point. And I heard this cat start talking, you see, Phil, in life, and within about 10, 20 seconds, I kind of gave a look at Marie and I went, Jesus, look at this guy. Jeez, what a bore. And he's going on and he's talking. And later on, when I was laughing to myself about it, I was laughing with Maria about it, I finally stopped and I said, what the hell? What are you talking about, man? Well, the guy was, what do you mean? Well, the guy was what? He was, you didn't listen to him. You were making all kinds of jokes about this dude being some pompous asshole with a hardware store in Terre Haute, Indiana, wherever the cat was from. I think he was from Fort Wayne, something like that. It wasn't Indianapolis, you know. Indianapolis would have been sort of cool, sort of, you know, quasi big city. But no, this was some. It was a perfect punchline to a joke. So that's where I was going with that, because I guess that's the way I think anyway. Oh, how can I turn this into a funny story? But what I missed was the guy himself and hearing what he had to say. And I know the whole thing about, you see, Phil, some people. But somewhere along the line in what that guy was saying, there might have been something that was worthwhile. I don't give a shit who you think you are or where you think you've been or what you think you've done. Somebody got to come along one day and blow your shit right out of the water with what they've got to say, and you didn't anticipate it because, as far as you were concerned, they were just some piddling little zero. I had nothing to say. They've never been where I've been. They have never done what I've done. They aren't near as good looking. And turns out, they got a lot to say. You know, so now this has been another one of those shows. I didn't plan this. I sat down and I started to talk. And I was talking. I was doing the pre-show. We haven't. I got to do a pre-show now. I haven't done a pre-show. This is what usually, not usually. This is a lot of what our pre-show is. I'll just be talking about stuff, and I'm getting the show ready. But as I began talking tonight, I thought maybe this is one of those shows because people have asked me to do more shows like these. Now I'm not going to make this 5 days a week because I know that. And you know, I got this comment from more than one person. The last show that we did like this, which we call Phil Only because I don't know what else to call it. Man, you know, I listen to Elton John for his music. I don't listen to him for his views on life. And I'm thinking how truly ironic that, and ironic in this meaning how funny that sounded to me, because what else is Elton John's music but his life? And so I'm sure that the chap would have responded by saying, well, it's entertaining when he does it that way. Yeah. Yeah. And I would not necessarily go and listen to Elton John lecture about his life. Although, I got to be honest with you, I might. Because I had never heard him do that in my entire life. I've rarely heard Elton John talk about anything. Now, he is a musician, so it's very, very different to hear a guy his whole life singing and playing a piano, and then he stops down and starts talking to you. So to say that I'm Phil Hendry and I do this talk, you know, I do this kind of satirical show, which is a lot of talking. And now I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to talk. Maybe it's not quite the departure that it needs to be, but to utilize the phrase that I only recently came to understand, it is what it is. It is what it is. And I had I was talking to Maria 2 weeks or so, 2 weeks or so ago, and I said, you know, you used to say it is what it is. And she said, uh-huh. I said, I never liked that phrase. She goes, I know. I said, but I finally figured out what it means. She said, what? Just deal with it. Just deal with it. You're not going to change it. Deal with it. It is what it is just another way of saying that. Just shut up and deal with it. I don't know. Maybe you need to leave the room and go and cry. Maybe you need to, you know, take it on head on. Maybe you need to jump over it. I don't know what, but deal with the damn thing instead of going through the whole dance of being pissed off that it's come into your life. You know. Now, our bar fight promotion, you know, is going along swimmingly. And we had a winner last week, and that was Margaret Gray. She beat Bobby Dooley. This week, you're going to love it, man. As I announced at the very beginning of the show, let me just repeat what I'm... God damn, look at all these messages that I've got. Holy shit. 72% to 28%, Ted Bell kicked Jeff Dotter's ass. 72 to 28%. Woo-hoo, man. I don't know. Now, Margaret Gray beat Bobby Dooley 79 to 21. So Margaret pounded Bobby's ass even more. Pardon the expression. You know. Now, looking at the results of that fight, And just looking at the fight itself, Jeff Dotter and Ted Bell, it seems sort of, I don't know, my money'd be on Ted, because Ted's this restaurant owner, and Jeff is this, let's face it, you know, he's just ripping a bong half the time, and he's a sort of a musician, and he's just sort of, you know, I guess what we would traditionally say is not really very formidable. Margaret and Bobby, that was a better fight because... You know, they're both equally vicious, but the history of them in pugilism has seen Margaret come out on top, except for the time when Bobby and Steve waylaid Margaret with wiffle ball bats. Now, Marvin Moskowitz is our winner. Marvin Moskowitz is the winner, and that's all there is to that. And Marvin's comment, by the way, the winning comment was as follows... Ted Bell, because he will pay the Dunphy brothers to be there for intimidation or to help out. Yeah, that's what that is, man. That's knowing Ted Bell's strengths, his inner strengths, his inner workings, his grooviness. his grooviosity. All right. That is today's show. Now, tomorrow, be around for our Friday show because we will be ready to rock and roll. Of course, we have our Friday night chat. The panel will be back tomorrow, and the panel will be back tomorrow to further celebrate and feat Marvin Moskowitz, and also to tell us what the Bar Fight Showdown 3 will be. Personally, I know what I'd like to see. I'd like to see a couple of real heavyweights. I don't want to say anything because I don't want to influence our crew, but we'll see who they've chosen to be a part of the Bar Fight Showdown number 3. You dig me? Yeah. Okay. World famous Phil Hendry Show is executive produced by me, Phil Hendry, for Siempre Incorporated. All rights reserved on Podcast One. Thanks for hanging out for today's Phil Only. Like I said, the crew, the panel, everybody back tomorrow, Friday. Join us over at Phil Hendry Show. Join us on our website, philhendryshow.com. Get a backstage pass. If you don't have one already, we'll have our backstage pass chat on Friday night. And, of course, visit us at our fan page, facebook.com/ Phil Hendry Fans, PHANS, and vote for your favorite pugilist contestant in Bar Fight Showdown number 3 coming up probably today. They might have posted the new fight, okay? See you on the show tomorrow and Friday night for our chat and all that, you know. Yeah.